something else. I say, do we have a problem? And she says, no, everything's fine. What was the email again?
And we're back with another episode of Why Y'all Working. I'm your host, Alaire James.
I'm Michael Ogutanya.
And we have a very special guest today, Yemi Faletti from Vidir Worldwide. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, sir.
Cool. So we want to introduce him, his background, the origin story of Vidir, as well as really just talk about him as the founder and principal of Vidir Worldwide. He's a pioneering generative AI founder of a research company and consultancy. Vidir is known for its expertise across the arts, culture, and entertainment sectors, and the ability to connect these fields with the power of generative AI. So he has about 7 years of creative consultancy industry experience, working for many different industry leading firms as well. And he's successfully, grown this company through the rapidly evolving landscapes of AI and media. So, give it up for Yemi, and glad to have you here with us today, bro.
Appreciate it. Good to be on, bro. Good to be on. Good to talk to you and Mike.
So let us know. I know we had you previously on our little podcast scenario when we were doing the radio sessions, but can we actually get into why you do the things that you do? Why is Vidir in existence? And why did you get to do the cool things that you were doing recently and traveling and all of that with the AI? Tell us more about that. Why do you work?
Yeah, absolutely, bro. I work because I'm just a purpose-driven person, and I've been blessed enough to where work and my interest are like one in the same. So I like to look at my purpose as being twofold, right? I'm here to teach and to create. And so the creative aspect, it's very easy. That comes from, throughout my career, it's evolved, but it's been anything from shooting recap videos for touring artists to working on album covers and working at Universal Music Group, doing creative deliverables there. And the teaching aspect is really what I've evolved into lately, especially with AI being introduced. So I like to consult brands, research, and just figure out ways that AI is actually gonna elevate the human experience or potentially detract from the human experience. So I work because it's fun and I love it, and that's a blessing.
Dope. I relate, man. We go way back, from families knowing each other. It's always been, I feel like, about the joy from how we exist, whether it's going to school and college, whether that's, pursuing entrepreneurial ideas. It's always been about the joy, because I feel like Drake said it first, as soon as I'm done having fun with it, I'm done with it. I just want to highlight a bit more about what does it mean to create a business model and garner contracts from using AI, and how do you find the joy in something so new as artificial intelligence?
Absolutely. So the business end really took some time to grow and develop. At first, I didn't really have a framework for it. So I was literally just charging brands like $2,500 for a set of like 3-4 images. I realized that that's not really sustainable. Like if I set that as the floor, that's not really sustainable because not every brand could meet that. And two, not every brand really needs that. Like I had to adapt and be more open to just meeting companies where they're at and whatever that looks like. So it could be anything from creating images, that's one pricing plan, to an ongoing retainer, consultative model, which is another plan. Or it could be video production, where I'm kind of like using AI to create visual mood boards in an elevated way from your typical PDF slideshow thing. And how am I enjoying it? And how is it fulfilling? Is dog, like there are no creative limits. You know what I'm saying? Before, take a mood board, for example. Before like generative AI came through, the way that people typically would approach mood boards is using Pinterest or sourcing media from online. Or they're just like that nice of an artist to where they can literally draw everything out. But a lot of people have to source these things from somewhere online, somewhere that exists already. With AI, that completely changed. You can reach into your mind, create a mood board, and differentiate yourself in a different way, because the potential is really, and so it's fulfilling because I'm learning new things, not only about AI and the technical work, but just like deeper things about my creative process, what creativity really means, and fundamentally how that might evolve for humans, as these things get better. And it brings some interesting questions, interesting conversations, and allows me to engage with interesting communities. So I'm pretty thankful for that. And I'm always excited to see like where that takes me, because no 2 days are the same.
And so I just want to follow up with that and to kind of backtrack a little bit, like, how did you get to the place where you were able to, meet companies where they're at? Like, can we talk through the creative process of becoming an entrepreneur from that standpoint, getting into the consultancy, getting into the brand curation and working with brands like Universal Music Group and doing that? How did you get started? You know, some of our audience is in college also, or, you know, fresh out young professionals that may also be trying to do the same things that you're doing. So can you give us a little bit of background on how you got started in the industry?
Yeah, absolutely. So the real origin, and, you know, this speaks to Michael saying we go way back. It started in 2017 when we went on a trip to Puerto Rico, and Michael was actually, you know, he came through with this Sony A6000 camera.
Facts.
And that was my first time even seeing a mirrorless camera, talk less of like understanding video capabilities in that way. So once I saw some of this stuff Michael was capturing, I'm like, dog, this looks realer than real life. Like, what is this? It was just like a very natural, intuitive moment where I knew I want to do more of this. And so once we got back from that trip, I started just like experimenting with my phone, like making recap videos of everyday things, whether it's me and my friends in a parking lot, you know, working on our cars, or whether it's concert. And so the very first concert I filmed was UMBC, when 21 Savage came to UMBC. I want to say April 2018, Quadmania.
Yeah, I remember that.
Literally, I had no background, no introduction, no connects in the industry. So I was like, all right, cool. I'm gonna buy a ticket and just get to the concert dumb early. Like, I'm gonna make sure I'm in the front. So I get there maybe 3 hours early. I line up. I had an iPhone, I think 8 Plus at the time, which was a pretty decent camera for what it was. And I shot a recap video. And from that moment on, I was like, this is work, but it doesn't feel like work. And I just kept trying to take that to the next level. You know, eventually that led to me being able to buy a camera. I saved up to buy a camera, a Sony the same camera, A6000, because the quality elevated once I bought that camera. Now more people were reaching out to me, different DJs, some of the homies at Towson, at Stevenson. They would put parties on and I'd just be the dude with the camera turned up but still working at the same time. As I progressed, that just led to higher and higher connections and, you know, more recognizable figures. So I distinctly remember there was a show at Echo Stage where Burna Boy, DJ Toons, and a couple other artists performed. And I saw DJ Toons. I was like, yo, that's WizKid's DJ. Let me chop it up with him. Very cool guy. We had a good conversation. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna cook up a recap video for you. Don't even trip. Like, you know, we exchanged numbers. I low-key, like, the next day I woke up, I forgot. I was recovering from all the other parts of that night. So when I woke up, I saw a text from him like, yo, how are the visuals looking? I hadn't even touched Premiere Pro yet. So I'm like, oh, nah, I gotta cook something up. So I hop on Premiere, cook up a recap for him, send it to him. He was like, bro, this is dope. You captured the Starboy lifestyle perfectly. And so I'm like, awesome. Well, I see you and Wiz are going to be in New York for One Africa very soon, and y'all are also going to be in DC. How about we, like, you know, work on a couple of shows and see what's up? And so we did. It went incredibly. And I just got, like, deeper insights on, you know, how to conduct yourself in, like, high pressure settings and how to convert that to creativity. And so that, I would say, was the catalyst for the rest of my career. From that point on, I was able to work with bigger and bigger names.
One second. You touched on something really, really, really important for a lot of creatives, which is entrepreneurs. And just, you know, everyday people in general, when you work in a fast-paced environment, especially in entertainment, right, you're dealing with a lot of high-profile people in a very vulnerable, let's say, state sometimes, oftentimes, depending on whether or not they're, you know, on drugs or if they're not, you know, having fun and in the middle of, you know, doing what they got to do as an artist, right? Whether it be, you know, performing or in a music video, if you will. How was that for you? How was the learning curve going from college to doing that on a day-to-day, on the weekend and in your free time?
I feel like this is pre-college.
Oh, okay.
You know, even pre-college where the parties were pre-college, but then, you know, a lot of those bigger concerts, that was like freshman year, sophomore year. So I'll speak to a different dimension of that as well once I answer your question. But navigating that was interesting because just the way I'm wired, it's always performance first. So it's like, get the job done and then reflect on it later. So being around certain people, it's like, yeah, you're who you are, but I'm here to make a recap video. Like, I'm not really worried about that part. We're here as collaborators, so I gotta cook. And then once I hit export on Premiere Pro, I'm like, bro, did I just do that? Like, crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, me and Michael are over there at One Africa. People are mobbing, like, we over there with the red wristbands just chilling. And in those moments, it feels just very organic, very natural. A lot of the times, you'll know that artists have different personalities, like you mentioned. So some of them are more social. Some of them are just like from the stage straight to the green room, to the tour bus or whatever it is. And it's low contact. But, you know, I just look at people as humans. There are different learning curves that come up. So the higher and higher I started to go, like, there would be some instances where in the moment, I would have to catch myself like, yo, chill out, calm down. And when I really noticed that was when I was going on tour consistently. So if I'm linking an artist at the venue, it's like, you know, chances were that it was either in Baltimore or DC, where, you know, I have huge networks there. Like, I grew up in Maryland, so it's like I feel at home. But when I'm over there traveling with the artist and going with them city to city, that was a bit of a learning curve, because it's like I only know who you are on stage and on TV and in interviews. Like, I have to get to know you as a person. We're effectively roommates for the next week or month or whatever. So that was a bit of a learning curve. Like, there were times where I'd be on a tour like a little too quiet or a little too shy. You just learn from those experiences. And then there are also moments where you get a little too caught up in the sauce and it's like, oh, we up, you know? Like, anything you want is provided for you. Like, you're at Johnny Dang's store, they're bringing you water, they're bringing you this, they're bringing you that. And so you just kind of have to bring yourself down to reality. And that takes us to the second dimension that I was alluding to, is doing all that while in college put me in like this two world situation where I would do this show and that's like the world that I operated in, just felt natural to me. And I come back to campus and it's like, oh my goodness, like, you're you. And I'm like, interesting. Like, it was weird to me because I always just like,
I said, almost like you're living double lives. Like, you got it
up, like, not because that's how I saw it, but that's just how people treated me. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm just one of the homies. Like, come eat at the dining hall. Like, I'd be at the dining hall and people would just be like, yo, is that you? And then you get stuff like, oh, I thought you'd be mean, or I thought like you were boozy or something. It's like, nah, you know. So navigating that while being in college was very interesting.
Definitely.
And then I have people always ask me about, like, you don't think people are just around you because of who you're around? And I'm like, I don't care. Like, it's not like you're taking anything away from me. I try to be a genuine person. So those are all just like interesting, you know, developmental experiences. And then eventually, so I was doing that independently at first. And then Universal reached out to me. I think I was on tour with Stunner for Vegas at the time. The agency 1824 that I worked with at Universal, one of their reps reached out to me and she was like, we need a content creator in the Baltimore, DC market. Like, would you be interested? And so I did an interview with them. I did like a little project to make sure it was a good fit. And then I got the job, and that was an incredible experience.
I want to go back to One Africa because we got to tell that story. And this was in Coney Island. So we're like bottom of New York near Brooklyn. Sorry, my voice, you know, I'm still coming up off of a cold. But so the first thing that happened, you had the full pass, like you had the full leverage to get through, I will say. So I'm glad that I could show like the camera and it was just a vibe. We had videos, a ton of fun in Puerto Rico. But it wasn't until we had to do a music video for an artist that was popping in the DMV, he's a good dude. That's when I had to realize, all right, Mike, you're either going to take this camera stuff seriously or you're going to work on something else. I think me and you split up. It was like a minute and a half. I did 45 seconds. By the time, I'm usually used to like kind of live footage, like we said, shooting like live concerts, adding those with VFX and all those the footages. Yeah. By the time I looked at my 45 seconds and saw your 45 seconds, I was like, all right, Mike, time to hang it up. Time to hang it up, bro.
That's crazy. That's like a core memory, bro.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I remember that. We were in Largo too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, One Africa, this is when I started to learn I had good negotiation skills, because we were in New York. One of my friends, Carlos, and you were there. We're all chilling, just trying to figure out how to get in. And I wasn't getting a response back from the person that I wanted to shoot with. But you gave me the phone number to one of the people who were like your main contacts. Get on the phone with her. I tell her, hey, I'm already in New York. I traveled here for this event. She was like, oh, well, who gave you the permission to? I said, I already sent the email out. I gave you my full credentials and my name. I'm not sure what's going on. I mean, she responds like really negatively, like, well, I think it's something that you really need to figure out. And then before she could say anything else, I say, do we have a problem? And she says, no, everything's fine. What was the email again? Send to her. Got my information, red wristbands. We had like a whole group of people with us. We got them into VIP. Some of the photos from this kid.
They're chilling. It was incredible. And I forgot about that whole negotiation too.
Mm-hmm.
That like just early signs that the entrepreneurial spirit was there, bro. Yeah. And that reminds me of like, I don't know if y'all have ever applied to Y Combinator. But mm-hmm. one of the questions they ask is like, what's one time you've had to hack something non-technically? Like, that would be the perfect answer.
From a visit with a friend in New York to on stage with Wizkid, he's doing his shooky and everything. Some of the photos are crazy.
That was a good time. And that shows you, like, all you need to be is determined sometimes. Act like you're supposed to be in some rooms, and that'll take you the furthest.
Definitely. Right. Like, hear that. I mean, act like you're supposed to be anywhere that you feel like you want mm-hmm. to be, right? Like, for sure. And especially when you get invited into these spaces, like, you know, Yemi getting asked to come out being on tour with some of the biggest artists out here, right? And, you know, you yourself saying that it was daunting for you. You did have to inevitably learn how to operate around some of these high profile individuals, living the star boy lifestyle and, you know, superstar lifestyle that a normal, you know, superstar is living. That's why, you know, I guess you could say some of your classmates and other friends were like, yo, like, why are you even here right now? If you were just in, you know, Jamaica last week and New York this week and whatever, whatnot before our exam that we have at 5 p.m. So definitely appreciate the realness there. I think that that's really knowledgeable for a lot of young students and entrepreneurs that are coming up too. Just to note, like you mentioning the beginnings of Vidir, was Vidir around during the time that you were at Universal, or did that come a little bit after? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, that was after. So, I mean, I was doing Yem Skeezy Studios prior to Vidir and prior to Universal, which was just like my freelance video operation. And then when I got to Universal, it was very focused on whatever they assigned me, whether it was doing visualizers or music videos or shooting shows. But unfortunately, obviously, like we all know, it happened in 2020, the industry shut down, the world shut down. But as a result, the music industry shut down. And we didn't know, not only did we not know, like not only were we unable to shoot and do anything in person, we also didn't know when we'd be able to resume. And this is at the time that I graduated from Towson. So there's just a lot of uncertainty. I have to figure it out. Like, I'm Nigerian, I don't like uncertainty. My future needs to be relatively clear, right? And so I just made like a tough decision to leave Universal and figure it out, because I don't want to be in that state of limbo. I was like, if I am going to be in limbo, then I might as well just operate on my own momentum and like see what I can figure out. So that's really when Vidir started. And at the time, it was just like a brand consultancy where I would take the insights that I developed from working in these different situations at high levels, at, you know, local levels as well, and just like distilling that information into a consulting practice. And as that evolved, I, you know, started doing research and just researching, like, because I realized that it's one thing to have expertise, it's another thing to turn that into a business and like consistently be able to deliver it and then scale it. And so I was like, okay, I need to know what industry is doing. I need to know what the established companies are doing. And that led to me becoming more of a researcher. And the more I started to research, the more I realized that like a lot of knowledge and a lot of skill sets are benefited from multidisciplinary learning, not just learning, like if, you know, I'm a creative consultant or whatever, not just learning about creativity, but like learning about science, learning about engineering, learning about physics and what brings the world together. It was like a very like esoteric but still sensible thing. And then that led me to AI. And once I discovered AI, the business trajectory changed immediately. It was like, oh, okay, like this is at the forefront of what humanity is going to look like. I need to pivot to where it's not like I'm abandoning my previous skill set, but I'm just using AI as an accelerant for everything I'm doing. So yeah, now Vidir has grown over time, like first from the consultancy, from being Vidir Digital to becoming Vidir Worldwide and being this AI research, design, and intelligence company.
No, I appreciate that. Go ahead, Michael.
What step did you take from, one, what are the toolkits that you use, AI tools? And then all in line with that, people are using like ChatGPT, some people are using Midjourney. What is that step from some people using it for their essays and using it for research papers and articles toward, what's the difference between that and that kind of leap you had to make towards some of the research documents and overall visuals you put together through Vidir?
Also, before, real quick, please define what AI is to you for our audience, just so that way they know.
Yeah, got you. When I speak about AI, I'm primarily speaking on generative AI. So AI programs such as ChatGPT, Midjourney, Runway, that allow you to enter a prompt in natural language and receive an output, whether it's text, music, images, or videos. So that's like when I speak about AI, that's the world that I'm speaking about. And so, Michael, this step, it was the first step was using it at that level, just like being a user and understanding it. And then it was really just applying my entrepreneurial skill set to like package it as something else now, to where I think it's fundamentally just, what questions are you asking it? Like, what are you asking it to solve? And that lens is going to color, you know, your experience of it. So if you're just using it for personal projects, such as homework or personal research or something like that, that's going to be what you get out of it. And it's going to be limited. But when it came to me, I think I started with an advantage because I was already technically skilled when it came to creativity. So like take Midjourney, for example, right? You input a basic prompt, like I would like to see a cell phone. It's going to show you that. But then if you're like, I want a product photo of a phone at this f-stop with this lighting, and you know, you just add some of those technical elements, you get something that looks a lot more production ready. And so I think the difference between those two ends is like just applying technical, you know, domain expertise, but also using ChatGPT to fill in the gaps that you might not have. So if I don't know something, I either tell it to explain it to me like I'm five, or I just tell ChatGPT to assume a particular identity, which is like one of the more interesting use cases that I've come across.
I mean, and that's really where you can start breaking those boundaries on what ChatGPT thinks it should share to you. Telling it, give me a breakdown on the different types of clouds, or saying you're a meteorologist, an expert, and you're presenting to a group of 100 people on the different variations of clouds. Those two different things, just based on, like you said, prompting it and giving it kind of the expertise or the leeway to use that expertise is huge. It's a balance, you said, between, because everyone says that, you know, with AI, you can do anything. Like, AI is removing boundaries. And a mixture of what you said is, as a photographer, as a videographer, you knew, again, focal points, you knew aperture, so you could kind of put that into your prompt. But then you said also open to understanding, like getting that wider domain knowledge, like you said, physics, chemistry, biology. Do you think that's, well, one, let's talk a little bit about how that's benefited you, some of the wins you have from Vidir and some of the projects you've put out.
Absolutely. So there have been quite a good amount of wins. And I look at it, sometimes I don't look at it from a perspective of win or loss. I just look at it as, oh, just an experience that I had, just a project I did. But I think for me, one of the biggest personal wins was getting my first paying client, because they recognized that, you know, my work is good. It was a lifestyle brand, Armura Colostrum. They do like health supplements and whatnot. And we worked on a series of campaigns, and they had initially reached out to me because of another win, getting selected to participate in the world's first AI fashion week with like very little Midjourney expertise. Like, but again, I hacked it because of my technical knowledge. Those were some awesome wins. One of the more recent wins is getting 60,000 views on an AI music video on YouTube with zero promotion over the course of 3 months. That was super cool because I wasn't expecting it. It was just a Sunday. I think I had like Chardonnay or something. I'm just sipping, making a music video, and I drop it on like a little burner YouTube page, and I check it, and like my email is just going up with notifications. I'm like, oh wow, interesting. Like, there was no strategy behind it. And it's funny too, because some of the more strategic projects and some of the projects I actually put more energy into, I'll drop it and it'll get like 10 views and like 3 comments. I'm like, okay, interesting. But as a creative, you learn not to get attached to the outcome, more of the input.